Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, we're back at Hokeham Hall in Norfolk, a country house so massive it not only contains a room just for statues, it also houses several incredible and inspiring stories. So many, in fact, that we've had to revisit it for a second time to hear them all. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of sheep-loving silliness, but Hokeham Hall is also home to some very impressive women. Speaking of which, you remember this one from our last episode.
I'm Catherine. I'm collections coordinator at Hokeham, which means basically I look after all of the stuff in the house. So paintings, furniture, statues, you name it, I have to look after it.
And for this second episode, we're adding another specialist because unlike Michael Gove, we haven't had enough of experts on this podcast.
I'm Lucy Purvis. I'm the archivist at Hokeham. I've been here now for about 6 years and I look after and research into the history, be that the people that live here or the people that work here, the buildings and the collection that's within the hall, and anything kind of oldish on the estate.
Speaking of oldish, Catherine's already told us about Hokeham's famous Thomas William Cook, but in case you missed it, Tom was a bit of a lad. He loved a party or three, took a five-year-long gap year, gambled his money on cockfighting, and came back with just about every Roman statue he could find. He also loved the ladies, especially if they were younger, much younger. There was a whopping 50 years between him and his wife. Sounds like he was the DiCaprio of his day. But was he actually as scandalous as he looks on paper?
No, I'm afraid Thomas William is actually pretty dull, really. He's known for being a farmer, really loved sheep and agriculture.
He loves sheep?
I know. But he was a bit of a dish, apparently. So, yes, you're right. His second wife was about 50-odd years younger than him. When he was 68, she was 18. And he wanted to marry her off to his nephew, who was going to inherit the house. And she said, well, actually, I'd much rather marry you, I think.
So, really?
Great sacrifice for him to marry the much younger woman.
What first attracted her to the exceptionally rich older man, do you think?
I have no idea. I think it must have been his conversation, personally.
Yeah. Do you know how they both met?
So he was actually her godparent ward.
What does a ward do?
It's a bit like we would call it a godparent today, an involved godparent, I think.
Bit too involved, yeah. Do you reckon the marriage was then ever sort of consummated?
Absolutely. They had...
Oh, it was?
Yeah. They had,
you guys are nodding your heads very, very vigorously, like, absolutely.
Yeah. Was it six children, Lucy?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was very consummated.
Immediately?
Yeah, very quick. He wasn't wasting any time.
We didn't have much time left anyway, did we?
The last child to be born, he was 84.
I'm not going to lie, that I just, a man of his age, how is he doing this?
I'm sure he ate a lot of oysters.
even though Thomas William Cook was a bit boring, he still did throw incredible parties. What sort of parties was he throwing?
Yeah, so he actually, as you say, boring chap, but loved a good party. So unsurprisingly, one of his favourite parties did involve sheep.
Yeah, as the guests or as the sort of fancy dress?
Well,
or?
Kind of as a bit of both, actually. So every year he'd hold something called a sheep shearing, which is basically a country fair. Load of farmers come, they look at sheep, they talk about sheep, and then they have a great knees up after talking about sheep.
Amazing. What a theme. For the music for these parties, what, because they've been playing music at parties, who are like the big composers? Who's like the Drake or the Kanye of the day?
You'd have Haydn kicking around, wouldn't you, writing his London symphonies?
Yeah, nice.
You'd have maybe a bit of Messiah. We like sheep.
Is that the name of one of the songs? No.
Yes, in the Messiah, there's a movement called for We Like Sheep.
Is there really?
Yes.
Oh, that's perfect for this party. Absolutely. Stick that on and get the sheep going. I'm going to be honest, I didn't at any point in any of my notes for this episode have anything on sheep. And now it's been 80% of this conversation so far. And I'm not sad about it. I'm not sad about it at all. Anyway, so there are also, so sheep is a big party, but there's also lots of shooting parties. And this is where Polly Fishburne comes in. This woman is quite a tenacious woman. This is a fierce lady, are we right?
She's feisty.
Yeah.
She's definitely feisty. Yeah. She started off working at Holcombe as a housemaid. Her father was a gamekeeper on the estate. He wasn't the gamekeeper. He was one of the assistant gamekeepers. Mm-hmm. And she would have come to Holcombe when she was about 10 or so years old. She would have lived in Church Lodge, which is where the gamekeeper still lives today on the estate. So she would have known all the kind of sights and smells of what being a gamekeeper was like, but she was stuck in the kitchen as one of the undermaids. And there's various accounts of what she did, but one of the main one that got her out of the kitchen was when she was hearing the shooting, she suddenly dropped all the saucepans and jumped out the window to go and find out what was happening. She could apparently ride any horse in the stable, and she was a great breaker of horses. But they realised that being an undermaid really wasn't the career for her, so she was agreed that she could go and work with the gamekeepers. And in fact, she was a much better gamekeeper than her father was, and generally thought that she was the equivalent of a man, except she was obviously wearing ladies' clothes.
I was going to say, that must have been a huge scandal at the time, because they're like, what, a woman?
But then you've also got, because at that point, the servants would have been all eating together in the servants' hall. Mm. So you've got all the gamekeepers and all the outdoor men, the gardeners, all eating together and being very masculine and very laddish like they would be. Yeah. You've got Polly that comes in, and none of the female servants want to have anything to do with her because she's a bit grubby. She's a bit gamekeepery. Yeah. She probably smells a bit compared to what they do. So she had to take her meals in the nursery. But there's a couple of really good little stories about Polly, and the fact that she was so formidable just comes across each time.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of gentlemen at one point that should have been eating and were waiting their dinner. And they thought they'd just take a stroll around the park. Mm-hmm. And they walked up to Church Lodge where Polly was living and said, oh, could you take us to the church and show us around the church, please? Mm-hmm. And she happily took them, but realised that they weren't just wanting to see the church. She managed to lock them at the top of the church and went home, and they had to be rescued some hours later when their absence was noted.
That's amazing. So she should have gone, oh, into this cupboard, gentlemen, and then as soon as you went in, lock the door, click, legs it away.
Yeah, exactly.
Legend. And then but, didn't tell anyone. That's amazing.
Well, no, I think the thing was that they became the laughingstock, and she wasn't reprimanded at all. In fact, she was kind of praised for showing dignity and independence.
Absolutely.
And that sort of
thing. Who do you reckon found them? Was it just like the vicar going in to like dust off the prayer books on the Sunday morning and just open up and there's these two sad-looking men?
I don't know. I've got this vision of them just standing at the top of St. Witherburgers, just shouting, help, help!
They open the door. What are you two doing in here? Well, not what we wanted to do in here.
Do you want another story about Polly?
I want every single story about Polly.
Okay, well, Polly was on the marshes. So when you've got Holcombe, you've got the lovely parkland, you've got the wall, and then you've got the marshes leading up to the sea. And they used to graze cattle, and in fact, they still graze cattle on there. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there was a bull on there that had taken out one of the labourers, and he was dead. And he was standing over, the bull was standing over the labourer.
Oh, God.
And everybody was like, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Mm. Polly took one look, went into the field and started walking towards this bull. And people were shouting, don't go, Polly. And her reply was, he knows better. And as soon as the bull saw her, he backed off because the bull had had previous with Polly when she'd shot him in the muzzle when he'd been misbehaving.
What? So this bully was like, oh, God, this woman again.
Yeah.
Firstly, what's a muzzle? As in like the nose?
That's the bit of the nose.
She shot the bull in the face. I'm not surprised the bull was quite angry in general then. If I had been shot in the face, I'm starting to have a bit of sympathy with the bull, actually. I mean, I don't know, between us three, I don't know what the biggest animal you think you could take in a fight is. Certainly not a bull.
I've actually answered this recently at a pub quiz.
And have you?
Not
at, at a pub quiz?
Well,
hang on, this is not...
session. Quiz is a bit too...
Yeah, I was going to say, there can't be like a definite answer. Go on then, I want to hear your answer.
I mean, I'm a bit hesitant because we talked about it a lot already, but I reckon it's a sheep.
Well, you're not going to get invited to any bloody of Thomas Cook's parties then.
Or maybe I am. It's just
maybe you are.
It's ticket for entry. Can you take a sheep in a fight?
And after dessert, we will be watching Catherine wrestle a sheep to death.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest person, but I reckon I could take a sheep.
How are you taking it? Are you going to kick it to death or...?
I'm going to flip it over, and then sheep are really good at dying.
So you just flip the sheep and then pray for natural causes. Yeah. Is that the plan?
Yeah.
Solid one. And Lucy, any advance on sheep?
Well, I found out today that I'm the same height as a red kangaroo as I was looking at a wall chart.
There's not a chance you're beating up a kangaroo, Lucy. I mean, I love... That is ambitious.
No, but... no. There is no way I would take out a red kangaroo. But I thought it was quite interesting I was the same height as one. Yeah. I think maybe a large tortoise. I would go that far.
And are you going to go for the same tactic? Just flip it over?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Flipping sounds good.
Yeah, sure. Mm. And myself, I think I could take a penguin.
What sort?
Chocolate bar. Chocolate bar penguin. Flip it over, lift its wing, read the joke, see you later, dead. Any more Polly stories?
So, yeah, Polly's father died in 1827, which is the time when the sheep shearing had all finished. And she and her mother returned to Yorkshire. And then Polly was employed at Cannon Hall Estate. And the reason why I'm telling you about Cannon Hall Estate was the lady of Cannon Hall Estate was Elizabeth Cook, who had been Thomas Williams Cook's youngest daughter, who very quickly moved out
right.
once Thomas got married again. So they were given a cottage rent-free and had three cows to look after, which is quite nice. And the heir did come, what became the second Earl did come, and recognised Polly, obviously, because of her reputation and knowed, and they reminisced together about life at Holkham. And then Polly's supposed to have said, "Oh, my Lord, what a spree we had over them wild ducks."
Oh, what's happened with ducks? We've had sheep, we've had cows, we've beaten up a kangaroo, a tortoise is dead, and now we're going after ducks. What happened with the ducks?
I have no idea what happened with the wild ducks, but presumably they were raising them and shooting them.
She shot one in the face.
They must have shot them together.
She shot a duck in the face, and then one day they came and there was a duck stood over a dead farmer.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
Same old.
Oh, yeah.
and catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I now want to talk about Lady Jane Digby, who hopefully hasn't killed any animals, but is, again, quite a woman.
Well, she was one of these people that grew up in Holkham. Although she was born in Dorset, her mother had been another Jane, and she was the Thomas William Cook, the old man, his eldest daughter.
Right.
Her mother was incredibly beautiful. Jane was incredibly, incredibly beautiful. She would have been in the nursery when Polly would have been going for her lunch.
Oh, really? So she'd have met Polly?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
I think they would have known each other. I think they would have at least walked past each other in the corridors, if not known each other. She was incredibly beautiful. She had very long golden hair. Loads of people think that she is, like, you know, the best thing since sliced bread.
Nice. Was sliced bread invented by then?
No, sliced bread's not bread.
So sliced bread's the best thing since Lady Jane Digby is actually what it should be.
Yes. She really captivated her grandfather, who obviously was Thomas William Cook. And she had this education, which was the same as the boys in the nursery before they went off to Eton. She learned lots of languages.
This makes sense why she sort of, because then she sort of went around collecting men from different countries, didn't she?
Yeah.
Learn a language, and you might as well grab a bloke from it. How what's the best way to learn? By doing. That's what I think. Just live it.
But her grandfather encouraged her to take an interest in horses and small farm animals. So presumably sheep. Again would be included in that. She read the classics, which of course at Holkham is very important, with all the architecture and the sculptures and the paintings and tapestries.
When you say the classics, are you talking like sort of Homer in the Iliad and all that sort of stuff?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Mm.
And wanted to know the stories behind some of the key pieces at Holkham as well. So she was being educated. She left the schoolroom at 16, but kept her governess, which is really important, who was called Miss Margaret Steele, known as Steely, who they had a friendship for the rest of her life. And the family outside of Jane also used Steely as a way of talking to Jane and communicating with Jane when she was somewhat cut off from them. So Jane left school in 1823 at age 16, and then she was a debutante the following February. Mm. And by the September, she was with her first husband, Edward Law, who was Lord Ellenborough. With him, she did have a son, probably, though it might have been her cousins.
Might have been her cousins? Hang on. You can't just breeze over that. This potential incest affair that's happening. Let's just dwell on that a bit.
It's not quite incest, is it, with a cousin?
Well, each to their own. We'll agree to disagree there. If you've got your morals on that side, I'm certainly on the side that hooking up with your cousin is wrong. But Lucy, if that's, you live your life and your truth.
The cousin was a good 9 or 10 years older than her. So, almost okay. Yeah. She was infatuated with him. But there again, her husband was, 15 years older than her. So, there was quite a similar bit there. So they had a son. And then quite quickly after that, she met her first royalty and took her first royal lover, which ended up with her having to leave for Europe.
Just what a phrase to say. She met her first royal lover. Like, you know, you always have at least one or two royal lovers in your time.
I wouldn't know. So, yes, she met Prince Felix and moved over to Paris, had a really scandalous divorce. And the divorce was so scandalous from Lord Edinburgh that where the Times newspaper used to just have classified adverts, it actually had details of the divorce case on the front page.
Oh. Why was it scandalous?
Well, she didn't really help herself. She stood on the balcony shouting out, "I am Prince Felix's mistress," or somebody caught Prince Felix getting into her hotel room in Brighton. And, you know, it was just this massive, massive scandal that she was a sort of unrepentant. Mm. So anyway, she leaves for Europe. She's just about divorced. She has a daughter. Prince Felix comes over, but then he actually realises that it's going to compromise his career being with this scandalous divorced woman, so leaves her.
Oh.
Which is rather sad.
Sad, yeah.
She's a completely damaged goods. She can't really come back and have her nice life. Her grandfather, who has a very young wife now, doesn't want to have anything to do with her. I think it's really quite tragic.
Yeah, is she just, like, heartbroken and completely bereft?
Yeah.
That's sad.
There's no more balconies to shout anything at.
So what does she do? How does she bounce back?
She goes to Munich and meets King Ludwig.
She's done pretty well. Number that two. Is a pretty good rebound. How are you going to get over that one? A king. No, fair enough.
She also meets Baron Karl von Wenigen, who turns out to be a really good chap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he does. Because she eventually marries Karl and has his child, who's called Herbert. And he supports her for the rest of her life.
Mm.
But they're not married for very long.
Oh.
She has another child, Bertha. There's a suggestion that poor Bertha has Mad King Ludwig as her father because she gets put into a mental asylum by the age of 20.
What?
Because prior to that, there hadn't been any great madness within the Cook line or the Digby line. The thought is that it might have come from King Ludwig. A little bit later, she meets Count Spiros Thytowski from Corfu.
Does anyone have a normal name in this entire story? Every bloke is called, like, sounds like a wizard from Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep, exactly.
What was his name again? Yes. Say that again.
Count Spiros Thytowski.
Right, okay.
And she and him would make late night trysts on her trusty mare. So they would ride out in the evenings and find each other.
That's fair.
Unfortunately, her husband, Wenigen, finds out and they have a duel. But Wenigen is such a gentleman that although he wounds Spiros, he takes him home and gets him better again.
That's nice of him, though, to patch him all up. Awkward carriage ride back, I imagine.
Very, very. Anyway, Spiros decides he wants to go back to Paris, so Jane leaves Wenigen to go to Paris with him. A little bit later, Jane's last child, Leonidas, was born. And Leonidas was the one child that Jane actually really, really loved.
I would have pronounced it Leonidas, but you said Leonidas.
I don't know.
He was my favourite Ninja Turtle. No.
Yes, Leonidas, so then she gets divorced from Wenigen. He decides that actually he's had enough. And Jane becomes Mrs. Thytowski and she gets married in the Greek Orthodox Church. So this is marriage number three.
Wow.
And she moves to Tinos with Spiros and learns Greek.
It just sounds so insane.
It does. It's Thytos
with Spiros. It sounds like a series of dips you'd get at a posh. And then Taramasthalata came in and said...
But this life that she's got in Greece with Spiros is just, it seems to be one of the happiest periods of her life. So happy that they decide to go to Italy for a holiday. Mm-hmm. And they take their young son with them, Leonidas. Leonidas, is that how you were saying it?
Leonidas, yes. Yeah. Well, also, so yeah, I'm also basing this off the movie 300.
Okay. So they take Leonidas with them to Italy, and unfortunately, Leonidas runs to a balcony and falls off and has the most horrific death, which Jane never gets over.
Bloody balconies.
And their marriage dissolves, and we lose track of Jane for about 3 years.
So she just goes off the grid in grief, essentially.
Yeah.
That's very sad.
Yeah. You know, she's had a number of children. I think this was her fifth child. At least two of other previous children have died really quite young. And, you know, this one that she'd got to about four, then this happens, which must be horrific for anybody. Mm-hmm. She then reappears. You'll like this. She then reappears in Athens with a freedom fighter called Christos.
God, yeah, Christos, excellent.
And they go and live in the sort of bush for a while, as it were, and have a very fun time fighting whichever freedom fighters they're fighting against. But Christos has an affair with Jane's maid, who she's brought from Paris, who's kind of travelled around Germany and Italy with her. So she gets rid of him. She corresponds with Steely, and Steely comes out and visits her in various places around Europe, but won't commit to living with Jane. And in 1853, 46-year-old Jane decides to sail to Syria to buy horses. Mm-hmm. And they land in Beirut, take a tour of the desert by caravan to go to Jerusalem and then up to Damascus and then to Palmyra.
Wow.
And she just loves Syrian life. She writes in her diary, "My heart warms towards these wild Arabs. They have many qualities we want in civilized life: unbounded hospitality, respect for strangers or guests, good faith, simplicity of dealing with themselves, and a certain high-bred innate politeness." So it's kind of all the things you'd expect, or you might have expected to have in English society, but the society that's completely said, no, we don't want to see you anymore. So on the last journey bit, that she wants to go from Damascus to Palmyra, she was told by the British consulate she needed an escort, and Jane hired some Mezarabs. And the one
what's a Mezarab?
A Mezarab. It's one of the tribes.
Okay.
That she hired by the tribes. Okay. And the leader of the tribe that she hired was called Majul, who was the brother of their sheikh. Uh-huh. He was really good because of the various people that she could have chosen to lead her party. He was the one that could read and write and was an authority on desert history. So it was something that really appealed to her. You could see the attraction. Yeah. And he was 20 years younger than her.
That always helps. What is she heading towards?
Well, she's heading towards Palmyra, which is south from Damascus, I think. Okay. And Jane and Majul just enjoyed horses. They enjoyed the company of each other. And as you can imagine, they just fell in love on this journey.
Yeah.
A year later, she'd married Majul in a Muslim ceremony, and her title became Sitt Mezarab. But they continued to enjoy the next period of their life together. They would spend 6 months in Jane's house in Damascus, and then the other 6 months they had in his nomadic tribe, travelling around the desert. And she'd sleep in one of their tents that was made from black goat hair.
Wow.
She would completely become this Arabian woman. She dyed her hair, her lovely golden hair. She dyed black. She put on the face covering. So she completely took on the role. She chose to do that to show respect to her new husband and his family and his tradition. Yeah.
So she pretty much, like, by the end of it, she really has, like, fully transformed, completely different person from this golden-haired English lady to now a Muslim woman in a desert.
Yeah. So her lovely English house that she had in Damascus, she contacted Steely to send out seed catalogues from the UK, and they were trying to make an English garden, this courtyard that they had with a lily pond, and they had lots of animals inside, so things like geese and turkeys and a tame pelican and gazelles and over 100 cats. So she was also this slightly mad cat woman.
Yeah, yeah, but why not? Chuck that in there. Absolutely. 100 cats.
And she built 100 cats.
I bet the place stank. I've got a mate who's got one cat and his house absolutely reeks.
And she built him a lovely stable because he was breeding Arab horses, and then she would help break them in. And she was known in the region for being able to treat sick animals. So those sick animals that she'd learnt to look after at Holcombe in her childhood, she was now then able to look after them.
Oh, wow.
So in 1873, there was a false rumour that she'd been killed and that her obituary was printed in the Times, which caused quite a lot of scandal because obviously, although we'd known about what had happened, she wasn't really in the public eye when she was over in Europe doing whatever she was up to.
Yeah.
And the family were a little bit embarrassed about that.
How did the rumour start? And how do they reckon she died?
Well, Jane was supplying her husband's tribe with guns and was leading them into battles because I think things were still a little volatile out there.
She was leading them into battles?
Her husband was leading them into battle, but she was providing the money for the guns that they were using.
Right, I see. Bloody hell.
So she was financing it. And she often went into battle with them. I think, you know, she was a keen camel's woman by this point, as well as a horsewoman.
Yeah.
So she could do whatever she wanted to do.
A little bit bloodthirsty as well. Why not?
But it's exciting. Imagine being a 19th century woman and all those layers and just being told, well, you've just got to sit still all the time. You want to be doing exciting things. And if you're in an exciting country like Syria would be, it would be worth doing. So, but no, in fact, she died in 1877 after an attack of dysentery, and she's buried in the Christian cemetery in Damascus.
After all those risk takes, it's dysentery that gets her.
Yes. Oh,
that's not a glorious way to go. She deserved better than that.
She did, but it's a kind of quiet way to go after such a sort of fireworky life, isn't it?
Yes. And how old did you say she was when she...
Well, when she died, she would have been 70.
Oh, that's, yeah, pretty good innings.
Yeah, not bad. I think so. For a life to have been here, there and everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Three husbands.
I think that's far as about the most varied life I think you could possibly ask for.
Mm. Lady Jane was a brilliant woman, far ahead of her time. She had four husbands, she had five children, she had numerous lovers, and she ended up in Damascus from Little Holcombe.
From Little Holcombe to Damascus. Not a bad trip.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Lucy and Catherine, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been incredible and ridiculous and heartwarming in spades. I wanted to ask you a few quickfire questions before you go. So aside from Hokum, what is your guy's favourite stately home or historical manor house?
My favourite is Craigside in Northumberland, which is the first house that has electric lighting in it.
Ooh.
And I quite like that.
Does it have a big chandelier by any chance?
Of course, a number.
Yes, I was going to say, of course it does.
It's got the earliest dishwasher.
Wow. As far as tourist attractions go, what is it, kids? Alton Towers? Harry Potter World? Or would you like to go and see the oldest dishwasher? Yeah. Excellent. And Catherine?
So mine is Wentworth Woodhouse, which is a house in South Yorkshire. It is the longest house in England. It's about 600 feet long. And it's this great... Oh, wow. White elephant, ruined pile of a thing with the most fantastic history. There is a Kennedy heiress. There is a scandalous affair. There's plane crashes. There's open cast mining. It is just the most bonkers place.
That's cool. And finally, why should people visit Hokum Hall?
So the official answer is because we are a fantastic Palladian house that is virtually unaltered since it was built in the 18th century. The unofficial answer is because we are a mile away from the most amazing beach. So you can come and go in the house, go to the pub and go to the beach all in one day. And where else could you do that?
What sort of beach is it? Is it a sandy beach or pebble beach?
Sandy beach
as well. Oh, God, this is great.
Yeah, it goes out for about 3 miles from Wells when the tide's out. So you've got a huge amount of space to bring your horse and jump around on that on it. I suppose you could always take your sheep if you had sheep that you needed walking.
Do people ride horses across the beach?
Yeah, the Household Cavalry come every year.
Do they?
Yeah, they have their holiday up here and the horses all come and everyone gets very excited that the tide's at the right time to see them.
I've always wanted to ride a horse across the beach. That's sort of one of those box tick dreams.
Well, come to Hokum.
Come to Hokum.
Deal. And with that, I'm going to say thank you very much, so much for coming. And I guess I'll see you on a horse in Hokum some point soon.
It starts with a horse in Hokum. And with any luck, it'll end with a marriage in Damascus. Or, you know, selling arms to freedom fighters. I'd be happy with either, to be honest. That's it for this episode. I'm off to the local sheep shearing festival. Until next time, shout your love from a balcony, shoot a bull in the face, and mind your manners.
Thanks for listening to Bad Manners. If you like the pod, please share it with your friends. Rate it on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review and make sure you spill the tea on any of your favourite Bad Manners that we could feature in future episodes. This podcast was produced by Atomize Studios for iHeartRadio. It was hosted by me, Tom Horton. It was produced by Willa Malensky, Rebecca Rappaport, and Chris Attaway. It was executive produced by Faye Stewart and Zad Rogers. Our production manager is Caitlin Paramore, and our production coordinator is Bella Cellini.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.